Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
My fellow truth seekers, welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening from 10 to 11 p.m., where truth, life, and love are one, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. 5 minutes past the hour of 10 p.m. Glad you could join us tonight. We're broadcasting live at the WCAP studios at 980 a.m. on your dial. And it is being live streamed through the WCAP website as well as the TuneIn app and then podcasted through Archive, Podbean, Breadbox Media, iTunes, iHeart, and probably a few other media outlets. Glad you could join us on Beneath the Surface tonight. Paul Morano with my guest this week, Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Bob?
Hey, Paul! That is really different, isn't it?
That is way happier than I thought would come out of your head tonight.
Really?
Yes.
I just decided to put some enthusiasm into it. How's
yeah,
that?
I bet. Yeah, it almost blew me away.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you have a good day?
No, actually, no.
Okay, well.
So I'm normally, you know, like that guy on Gulliver's Travels. I don't know if you remember the cartoon. He's a little bit like Eeyore.
Yeah.
It'll never work.
Yes, I remember him. Yeah. But tonight you've decided to give that up, to put that behind.
I decided just to put that to the side.
Oh, to the side.
Yeah. Well,
I'm hoping
you
throw it out. Why don't you put it in the trash?
Well, I guess I know myself, and so I'll put that to the side, and I'll pick it up when we're done with the show.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hide it on you, so maybe you won't find it.
All right.
978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface, 978-454-4980. If you would like to give us a call and give us your 2 cents, because we're looking for a few cents tonight, and your two would be awesome. Or you could jot down your thoughts at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers, and that's all one word, after the slash, that is, facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Okay, Mr. Bobbert.
Hey!
This is a Facebook post I posted. It was either yesterday or the day before, and already has, I think, over 100 likes and so forth.
Oh, I did not read it.
Okay, it goes like this. Quote, "As a rule of thumb, what stands in between a people and totalitarianism is virtue and self-control. One sign a people have given up and thrown in the towel is their common use of euphemisms such as alternative lifestyle, choice, adult consent, and privacy to rationalize evil. This adolescent attempt to stretch liberty past its limits into unnatural territory is a surefire way to lose freedom." Unquote.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think...
Oh, by the way, I didn't even tell what the name of the show was tonight.
tell us what the name of the show is.
Yeah, because it relates to that Facebook post.
Okay.
The name of the subtitle of the show tonight is Liberty and Law, Friends or Foes. I'm going to talk about liberty, law, and its relationship to each other, and whether or not we can attain happiness through either liberty or law, because happiness is the ultimate end of human life. And, Bob, what do you say on that?
Well, let me try answering the question directly. Liberty or law?
Liberty and law.
Liberty and law. Friends or foes? And I would say it depends.
Oh, on what?
Well, it depends on a lot of things. One is our definition of law, our definition of liberty.
Yes, we need to do that. We need to define those two words.
Yeah, see, like talking to an ordinary person on the street,
yes.
I think some people might say they're foes.
You know,
there's this like they're in contest with each other. And I don't agree with that position. I don't believe that the law and liberty necessarily. And I think most people think when they think about the law, they think about human law. They don't think about other laws.
Yeah, so we need to unpack all of this tonight. And I need to understand if there really are people on the street. Aren't they usually on the sidewalk?
Yeah, that's true. They are on the sidewalk. But I guess the sidewalk counts as the street for the question, the purposes of the question you're asking the guy.
All right, just want to make sure. You're always talking about the man on the street. And
they're not in the middle of the street.
Well,
they're on the side of the street.
Well, even if they were on the side of it, they're usually on the sidewalk.
Well, that's why they call it a sidewalk. They're on the side of the street.
But it's not. It's after the edge of the street. No, it is not on the substance of streetness.
We could have an argument about this for the rest of the show.
I think that should be the next show. All right. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. All right, we need to unpack this. So why don't we define both of these terms? Law is an ordinance for the common good promulgated, if it's a positive law, promulgated by a legitimate authority.
Very good.
You buy that?
I'll buy that. I was going to say something similar to
that's
that.
That's very optimistic, no?
Yes. That's pretty much there.
All right. So for those who are listening, we need to slow that down a little bit.
Right.
A law is an ordinance of reason.
Yes.
You want to break that down? What does an ordinance of reason mean?
Well, felt a little cut out there.
No, you're still on.
Okay. So an ordinance. It's a lot of people would say like it's a command, but I would like to go to the root of the word, which implies order.
Yes.
So
it does,
and so it is the way we ought to be if we're using ordinance in the right sense. It's the way we. So an ordinance is like a measure or a standard against which we should act.
So to use a very short term then, an ordinance is the right way.
Right. And the law, so in the terms of the law, it's like a rule that we are given.
But it's not an arbitrary rule.
Right, because we follow
that. It's an ordinance of reason.
It's an ordinance of reason, so it's not arbitrary.
Right.
And a lot of people do think of the law as something that is arbitrary.
They do, yes, especially Americans. Contemporary ones, anyway.
But we tie this ordinance of reason, I think we need to introduce God, who is the real big lawmaker in the sky, and have an understanding of him that he is, God is reasonable.
Yes.
I think the reason why we think of law as arbitrary and unreasonable is because of a guy, Ockham, who was
William of Ockham.
William of Ockham. He kind of posited the law in God's will. Rather than in God's reason.
I see.
So it that would lead to people believing that this is just a command of God. God could change the command if he wanted to.
All right. Now, but before we get to God's law, i.e. the commandments, Let's just talk about law in general still.
Right, okay.
Okay, law is, at least theoretically, the right way or the correct way of behaving or acting or conducting oneself. Because it's an ordinance of reason. It's not
right.
Arbitrary. It's not somebody making up rules for selfish reasons.
Right. It's for the common good.
That's the next thing. An ordinance of reason for the common good.
Yes.
All right. Now, when it comes to civil law or governmental law, each culture, each nation, each state is to make laws that are in accord with reason and the common good for their culture and for the sake of the good of their people.
If you're talking about the particular people and you're talking about human law, yes, that is true. Yeah, there are certain customs that the law needs to take advantage of, and it also needs to look at the people themselves and see where they are as far as following the natural law on their own through their own virtue and whatnot.
Well, that brings us to another question, which you just mentioned, the natural law.
Right.
Now, natural law and civil law are two distinct things, although
yes,
they're meant not to contradict
by
each other.
By civil law, you're talking about human law.
Human law.
Okay.
Whereas by natural law, we're talking about the way of human nature.
Yes. Well, I would say a good definition of the natural law is a participation in the eternal law.
And that's Aquinas' definition. However, you would also admit that those who do not yet have an understanding or a belief in God can still recognize and respect the natural law.
Right, because the natural law is written in our hearts. So everybody has a kind of intuition or something speaking within them that they recognize right and wrong. I mean, they would say, this thing that is happening, whatever it may be, they may say, this is unjust or unfair or something like that.
Yeah.
They're speaking from the place of natural law.
That's written in their hearts.
That is written
it's
in their
really
hearts.
It's really amazing. The first moral claim or proclamation, if you will, of little children.
Right. That's not fair.
That's not fair. Those three words. Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, none of them have taken a moral philosophy class.
Right.
None of them really understand ethics, per se. And yet, there's something intuitive about the small child. As soon as they're able to talk and understand things, they will say, that's not fair.
Right. They can recognize the
justice.
They can recognize the broad outlines of justice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that little children will do, like, little bad things because they are fallen human beings as well.
Yeah. But it's interesting, even before the age of reason, which is around 7 years
right.
old,
they got it. They have this
intuitive recognition of perhaps the most fundamental part of morality, and that is justice. That's not fair.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's not something, even though parents do teach their kids right and wrong,
yeah.
this is something that even is before that.
I agree.
They're not a blank slate entirely. They have some knowledge
so
themselves.
So that general understanding of right and wrong is written on every human heart.
Yes,
and
that's absolutely.
And that's the natural law that we should form our consciences to and live according to.
Right. And we develop that natural law through reason, and we express that in our human laws if we're doing it right.
Okay. So then, what happens, when we understand that a civil law, a governmental law, is in violation of natural law?
Well, we want to change it.
Okay, so then...
I mean, this is what we've done throughout history. I mean, people in the past have said, you know what, slavery is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and it was definitely present in American history. And in Britain and other places as well, they just recognized that enslaving, you know, black people was wrong. They knew that this was against the natural law, and they wanted the law to be changed.
Isn't it interesting how slavery was one of those institutions, and I put that in quotes, that has been around since mankind has been around.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, you win the war, you're going to enslave the guys or kill them. One of the two, right? In most ancient societies?
Yeah, in ancient societies, you know, there were two ways to get into slavery. One is to be the losing side,
yeah,
and you would be put into slavery. The other one was to have such massive debt or have no means of earning money yourself or getting food. And you either sold yourself or your children or whatever into slavery.
So it took many, many centuries for mankind as a whole to recognize that this is below human dignity.
Right, right. It did take some time. And this only really happened. I can't imagine any instance it happened out of Christendom. You know, it was really Christianity that really awakened people to this idea of human dignity and that this sort of thing was wrong to do to other human beings.
Yes, yes, that's very interesting. And we were one of the first, if not the first, nation to actually reject slavery after having it.
Well,
on our own.
Yeah, Great Britain beat us.
Okay.
The United Kingdom beat us by 30 years or so, and I'm not sure about the other European countries, but we were not the first.
Yeah.
But we did have a bloody war over that.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people deny that sort of thing, but the real root cause of the Civil War had to do with slavery.
Okay. All right, so when there is a violation of natural law, which includes human rights and human dignity, when there is a civil law that violates that, that needs to be protested against
and
changed.
Absolutely.
And the civil rights movement is an example of that.
Well, yeah. Martin Luther King Jr.
had
a great letter from a Birmingham jail that described that sort of stuff, and he brought up the natural law of being important, and he talked about just laws and unjust laws.
Yeah, and those unjust laws need to be fought against, like you said, and changed
because
they violate human dignity and the natural law. After this break, I am going to ask you if you think the pro-life movement is another more contemporary movement that is seeking to align natural law with civil law.
Okay.
978-454-4980. We're talking about the relationship between law and liberty. Haven't even mentioned liberty yet. Can't wait to get to that. Paul Morano here with my guest this week, Mr. Bob LeBlanc. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. We'll be back in two shakes of a lamb's tail.
Forgive to be simple, the gift to be free. Tis a gift to be simple, tis a gift to be free, tis a gift to come down where you want to be.
Yeah.
And when we find ourselves in a place just alive,
beneath the surface. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Glad you could be with us here tonight. We're here only till 11, as usual. Guest tonight is Mr. Bob LeBlanc, talking about the relationship between liberty and law. Are they friends or foes? And we spent the first segment talking about the definition and the meaning of law, the right way of conducting oneself for the that is an ordinance of reason for the common good. And if it is posited, then it's posited from a legitimate authority, and that's usually what civil law means. Or if it's internal or intrinsic or inherent in our nature, then it's called natural law. Well, Bob.
Yes.
A lot of people, like we said before, people very often see law in its essence as something that's arbitrary, and we're saying law is not meant to be arbitrary. True law
is meant to be reasonable.
Is in accord with reason and human nature.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you recognize God, the religious dimension of this, of course, is that it comes directly from God, who is eternal, infinite, unending reason and love.
The divine logos.
The divine logos. All right, so then, law has all that. When it comes to liberty, Would you define liberty as personal freedom, generally speaking? How would you define liberty?
No.
Okay, how would you?
Well, I would use borrowing from St. John Paul II.
Yes.
Liberty is the freedom to do what one ought to do.
Right.
A lot of people view liberty and freedom, they view them as a freedom from restraint. So the law is viewed as some sort of restraint, and so you remove laws and you have more liberty.
Right. And this is kind of a post-Lockean understanding of liberty, that it is the freedom to do what you want, and what would be restraining that, of course, is governmental intervention.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people says, well, I've got to be free to choose, you know, right or wrong, to do evil or rather than good.
Yes.
That kind of, well, we know if we sin or if we do evil, we're acting against reason. We're not acting in reason or in a reasonable fashion.
Right.
And so, it is true that we are free. God has given us free choice to
we
accept
have that,
him
that ability.
Or reject him.
Yeah.
But it's acting not as a human being, not as a rational animal.
And not in accord with our nature.
And not in accord with our nature.
Yeah, so then you're saying that we have the ability to choose evil,
right,
but we don't have the right to choose evil.
Well, there's that other word, rights.
Yes.
And stuff. You know, we have maybe a kind of a skewed view of rights as well.
Right.
And I think that comes to a different person that was not William of Ockham. I think it was Suarez was the person. He kind of bounced off of Ockham.
Okay.
And he kind of saw that law was a command, so he followed Ockham in that, but he wasn't anomalous. But in his view of rights, he saw that rights were the power of a servant in as opposed to the person above them that they should be obedient to, or the person in command. So you had a right. It was your power against the person in command.
Okay.
Which is, I think sometimes people view that, I have rights against the government kind of thing. And that's kind of, I think, a flawed view of it. I would like to see rights are something that you are due. It comes from the virtue of justice, where we understand.
And I think what you're saying is that the true understanding of rights are not given to us by any human authority, certainly not by governments. Rights are intrinsic to our human nature, given to us by God.
Right.
And we have a right to fulfill or seek to satisfy natural human inclinations that lead to happiness.
Well, that's all true, but
fulfillment.
We also want to throw another thing in here that we already brought up.
Yeah.
And that is balanced against, or not really balanced, but actually part of the common good. I don't want to put the common good and rights in opposition.
Right, they're not.
But actually, if we understood the common good correctly, then we would have rights. We would have what we are due. So the common good includes those just rights of what we are due as human beings.
So then, a lot of people would like to pit individual liberty versus the common good.
Right.
What you're saying is that they go perfectly, they align perfectly together if they're both understood properly.
Right. This is what we should look at, is a more broader view of all these things. Justice, the common good, rights, and laws, they're all interrelated in a certain sense, and it takes a person with wisdom and prudence to actually understood that the correct balance between all these.
But if they're all ordered to the common good, wouldn't that include the individual's good.
Right, absolutely. Okay. The common good is not in opposition to the individual's good.
Never.
Never.
Okay. I think a misunderstanding of it is that, those are laws that don't really, that get in my way of my personal happiness.
Right, right. Well, right. I mean, think about it this way. I was, just before the show, I was watching Support Your Local Sheriff. I don't know if you remember that movie.
The name rings a bell. I never saw it.
Okay, it's a James Garner film. I like James Garner for some reason. He's got this attitude that I like about him.
Do you remember Maverick, by the way?
I do a little remember Maverick a little bit.
The old Western?
Mainly remember the Rockford Files.
Okay, that was afterwards, yeah.
That was afterwards. So James Garner plays a guy walking into town that just experienced a gold rush, a gold boom.
Yeah.
And lawlessness was happening. You know, there are people shooting each other all the time.
Yeah.
And, things are going crazy. And he's walking amongst the midst of this, and he discovers that they're jacking up the prices for everything. And he's going, well, I'm going to need a job. And he sees posted, we need a sheriff for this town. And he picks up the thing, and he goes, okay, I'm going to become a sheriff. And well, I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is without the law here as a bare minimum. Now, there are a lot of conditions here that I'm supposing, but we need a kind of an ordered liberty. We need law at a certain just laws at a certain level in order to have any sort of freedom at all. So if you have just mere chaos, people robbing each other, killing each other, you really don't have conditions to have liberty for yourself, for individual liberty. You're always in constant fear of whether you're going to be shot or whether your property is going to be taken away or all these sorts of offenses against human dignity.
To go back to what you said, that liberty is the freedom to do what one ought.
Right.
Now, of course, somebody was going to ask the question, what does one ought to do? I mean, how do we get this oughtness? Another way of saying it is liberty is the freedom to do what is good.
Right.
All right. So then the question, of course, is where do we get our notion of good? And this is where I think comes into play law.
Right.
Because law is for the common good. Individuals.
The end of law is the common good. You want it.
And individuals share in that common good.
Right.
So then, this notion of law is seen as.
Can I add something here?
In its essence, I was going to say that the natural law is the form or the structure of liberty.
Okay. Okay. Well, the term that I would use is ordered liberty, which we talked about order before, meaning that you have a certain structure here where you can do the good that you want that so that you can attain happiness or you can pursue happiness.
Mm.
But I wanted to add something here just so, because I think a lot of people would think that the common good is in competition with the individual good.
Right.
And this is not what we're talking about here. I guess a good analogy would be if the team wins, what did the individual lose in that?
Even if he went 0-for-4 at the plate.
Right.
Yeah, he struck out 3 times, but he won the game. He won.
He won the game. That team won the game, so each individual gets to experience that good, and each person's piece of that good is not diminishing the total. It's not, you won, your team won. It's not as if the individual good and the team good were in opposition.
Now, suppose you just won the World Series, and you went, again, you had, say, in that World Series, you got up 25 times, and you went 2-for-25. You had a horrible World Series at the plate, yet your team just won the World Series.
Right.
You share in that ultimate good just as much as the winning pitcher or the guy who went 20 for 25 in that series did.
Right. Your team won.
Yeah. Yeah. So the good or the end results is the same for all the individuals when the common good is met.
Right, right. All and right. So this is the sort of thing that we're looking for in society.
Yes.
It's not that some what you don't have the common good if the common good is being hogged by one particular person. That's let's say that, oh, this person gets all the mining rights for everything in the entire town or something like that. That's not really working toward the common good, or at least that's not the conception that we're talking about, the ideal here. Mm. But we're talking about a peaceful, ordered society where you're able to accomplish the things that you would like to accomplish, the things that are good.
Now, can I take that and make it into the analogy of the individual human person? Doesn't there need to be an ordered life in each individual? And isn't this the life of virtue?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That goes into something we talked about before the show.
Yes.
Yes, the law itself is not sufficient to create the conditions. It's necessary.
Yeah.
The necessary precursor for everything, the bedrock. But if you have all these laws, you don't necessarily have people working in accord with these laws in a harmonious sort of way.
And you have a lot of people who are trying to get around the laws.
Right,
and trying to get away with things. And even if you have the best laws in the world, you're saying, if you have people with these kind of selfish attitudes, you're going to have a chaotic society.
Right, right.
You say the same thing about the individual.
So we've said it before on the show, in order to have a self-governing people,
yep,
you need a self-governing people. So if you want
to avoid totalitarianism.
Right.
Okay.
If you want a government that is self-governing,
yep,
then you need people who are individuals governing themselves.
According to what is true and good.
Right.
Not according to the desires of the flesh.
Right, right. Well, I would say they're not governing themselves if they're letting themselves go to their passions. You know, if you act just in accord to your passions or feelings or desires.
But isn't that a part of human nature, that we have passions? Why can't we act in accord with them?
Because some of these desires and passions are what we would say disordered. That is that bad word there.
Disordered desires, yeah.
Disordered desires.
This is, of course, something that our contemporary society is fighting or militating against. They don't want to recognize.
Well,
desires are disordered.
They recognize some of these disordered
desires.
Well,
not when it comes to sex, of course.
Right, right. But yeah, if you said, okay, you need to be this sort of athlete, you know.
Yes.
What are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, just go eat whatever you want, whenever you want?
Right.
Are you going to just fail to exercise? Because
right,
I don't feel like doing that. You know, it's hard. It's tough. I don't want to do that. Of course, people recognize that there's certain things that you need to do in order to be able to accomplish what that goal that you that
yeah,
you have, to be an athlete or in the sense of a Christian or a religious person, you would want to reach communion with God as your final end.
Why?
Because that is where we're going to get our happiness.
That is the ultimate form of happiness.
That is the ultimate form of happiness, is to be with God.
Okay. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. A person of faith, of course, accepts that immediately.
Right.
I think those who lack that level of faith may ask why that is, and I'll ask that question after the break. Am I hearing music? Okay, awesome. We'll get into more depth on this question of whether liberty and law are friends or foes. 978-454-4980. You are Beneath the Surface with me, Paul Morano, and my guest, Bob LeBlanc. We'll be back. This is our final break. Back.
All right.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Paul Morano with my guest this week, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, talking about liberty and law, friends or foes. So, Bob, we had mentioned before the break that you believe that the ultimate law, there can be no moral law without a moral law giver.
I don't recall saying that, but
but I think that's what you were saying without saying it. And that moral law giver is
right.
He who we are made for.
Right.
So all of the law and the laws are to assist us in being in union with the lawgiver himself.
Right. You introduced something here that I think we should bring out here. The law just isn't compelling you to do something according to God's will or to an authority's will.
Yeah.
The law also teaches, which I think a lot of people kind of forget. Especially, I think we noticed it, especially, at least for Christians, they noticed it, or religious people, they noticed it, when in Lawrence versus Texas.
Okay.
The law was, against sodomy.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Supreme Court overturned that.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people said, you know, that was an unnecessary law, and I don't think it was ever really enforced except for this one spurious time that brought up the case. But the law doesn't necessarily need to be enforced rigorously all the time.
Because it has that added dimension of teaching.
It has that added dimension of teaching. And you do see it sometimes when you talk about with a person who doesn't understand natural law, that
yeah.
you will say, you know, this is wrong.
Right.
And they will say, well, this is the law.
But it's legal, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the law.
It's legal. It's the law.
And I'm sure a lot of people said that about black people being oppressed.
Right. That slavery is the law. It must be okay.
It must be okay. And I'm sure you hear a lot of people saying that about the unborn today.
Right. They say
it's legal.
It's part of the Constitution as the Supreme Court defines it, that we're not doing anything wrong to these unborn babies. Because it's part of the Constitution, as the Supreme Court says.
So it's legal. Illegal. It must be okay.
It must be okay.
So,
yeah.
So you have a point there. With those who are perhaps a little less than fully mature, the law does serve as a teacher to a lot of people.
Right.
Especially those who don't understand natural law. So my question now is: would you say that the pro-life movement is the new civil rights movements of the past 40, 50 years?
Oh, absolutely. I see all these parallels between slavery and the civil rights movement and abortion
and
the pro-life movement. Because at root of all of these, and here's the really great thing about the Western world here is the understanding, the growth in understanding about human dignity.
Yes.
It is so pronounced. I mean, we have it in the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal.
Endowed by their creator.
Right. Endowed by their creator, but with certain
inalienable
rights.
Not given by the state. They're inalienable.
Right. Right, so it's something that is part of the human being. That something is special about that human being, and really the key to this. And I'm sorry to say this to atheists, but you know it is being in the image of God.
You know what? Even honest atheists like Nietzsche said that if you take God out of the picture, but which by the way he wanted to do in Western civilization, if you take God out of the picture, you will no longer have human dignity and human equality.
Right.
And he's right.
You know, Nietzsche was an honest atheist. I mean, he understood the ramifications of removing God from the picture.
And what's ironic is that many people who are would be considered liberals today embrace so many of the tenets that were born out of Christianity. like what we're talking about, human dignity and human equality, that cannot be recognized without first having that foundation that man is made in the image and likeness of God. What they do is they throw out the foundation. They want to keep the top layer, which is equality.
Yes.
And of course, once you throw out the foundation, the house of cards will eventually fall.
Well, it kind of brings up the question, what does equality mean?
Yes.
What do they mean by equality? I think removing God from the picture, they remove justice from the picture. So you have a distorted view of what equality might mean. You want equality of results rather than respecting certain natural rights, like the rich are pitted against the poor, in kind of, I think, wrong-headed ways.
Well, wouldn't it be equality of human dignity?
Well, yes, I would say that. Equality of human dignity.
Of inherent value?
Right. Well, the thing is being in the image of God. God is of infinite value, and here we are. We carry that image within us. It's talking about a kind of an infinity that toward all these human beings.
And it has led Western man in general to respecting the individual as a sacred being.
Right.
Not just as a walking, talking animal.
Right. That is the other thing that we see amongst this kind of secular humanism is this kind of blurring the line between animals and rational animals, between human beings and beasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I certainly have heard them say, you know, well, you know, what was it that little ape, that ape that had the baby in the zoo there?
Yeah, about a year or two ago.
Right.
I can't remember his name.
And so there were not a few people who said, well, maybe we were wrong to kill that ape.
Yeah, some people were angry at that.
Yeah.
And by the way, just so if people don't remember that story, a little baby boy got into the pen in a zoo, I believe,
right,
of a silverback gorilla, and they were with each other, and the gorilla
started dragging the baby through the water.
Started dragging the baby, but the baby wasn't hurt yet.
Right.
And some people were saying, why don't you just scare the gorilla or try to do something, but don't kill the gorilla because the gorilla has intrinsic worth.
Right.
And we're saying, if you take God out of the picture, that human beings are made in his image and likeness, then they might actually have a legitimate argument.
They may.
The baby any worth more than the gorilla?
I'm not sure if you can answer that.
I'm not sure either. And so too Nietzsche and others.
Yeah, so you move into this kind of thing, and here we are, we're saying this little baby, this late baby human being, or this child who is not fully mature.
Yeah.
And we're saying this person has equal rights and dignity.
To a king.
Yes.
Yeah, to the most important person in the world, supposedly.
So yes, yeah. And I don't think secular humanists understand that sort of equality.
No, that doesn't make any sense outside of the understanding that man is made in the image and likeness of God. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. So, you wanted to get into this notion that law, even though it is good in and of itself, law doesn't save. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm taking this from St. Paul in his letters,
yeah.
and he makes this claim that the Jewish law that God had given to the Jews, that law that God had given to the Jews, wasn't salvific. It didn't save people.
Right.
And
what was it for?
Well, it was. I think God was training the Jewish people. He was preparing the time for the Messiah.
So many of those 600 and some odd laws were meant by God to be temporary.
Right.
Like training wheels to a bicycle. They were meant
to be temporary. Oh, that is a great analogy.
Thank
yes,
you.
Training wheels to a bicycle.
That's why
yes.
I'm here.
But it didn't get them to the right place. It led them to the right place, but
right.
did not get them there. Did not go that final yard that you needed to go to be saved. And looking at this, you begin to realize that what you need in order for that law to work is you need that interior disposition. You know, okay. Jesus summarized the Ten Commandments into two great commandments, or sometimes they say one great commandment, and that is the law of love, the law loving God and loving neighbor.
The vertical relationship and the horizontal relationship.
Right. Yeah. And so you have, and this, I think, because a lot of people get love wrong itself.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
But understanding what love means in the context of the law, then you understand what the law really is pointing toward. So you understand that if you break one of the Ten Commandments, then you're breaking a commandment of love.
You have not loved.
You have not loved.
Right.
And so what a person needs to do, a person is not directed by government or from the outside, but they need to be directed interiorly to follow the law. So a person who has no control over themselves and they have no direction.
Yeah.
You know, they follow their passions,
yeah,
but they don't follow that interior law of love, then the outside law is going to be a burden on these people.
Yes, a huge burden. So without the interior conversion, laws themselves are burdens and not assistance to happiness.
Right, right. And so now taking this general theological sort of worldview here and moving it into the day-to-day life of human beings, talking about human laws, and I'm seeing the direct parallel between the two. We had several of the founding fathers who are talking about, you know, this Constitution was meant for a religious and virtuous and moral people, and is unsuited to any other. And so what they were talking about is people who had been nurtured by Christianity. They understood the reason and purpose for these laws, for the eternal laws, for the natural law, and eventually they understood what the meaning is and the purpose of the human laws.
Yeah.
And so that therefore they could follow those laws.
So, in other words, laws are impossible to follow and seen as obstacles and burdens for those who do not have a proper interior disposition.
That is what I'm saying.
Oh,
very good.
Okay, now here's the trick, though.
All right.
Most of us are born, all of us, I would say, are born, because vis-a-vis original sin, we're born without this interior disposition.
Right.
So we begin with the notion that, you know, these laws are getting in the way of what I want, what
right.
I desire, and I cry and I stomp my feet until I get it.
Right, right. You're all describing an infant perfectly.
Well, and an adult that has not matured spiritually past that point.
Right.
But and they do it in more subtle ways. But how is one changed interiorly, so that the law is something that we embrace and we know that it points to happiness and love?
We develop a virtuous life.
We develop a virtuous life.
So,
and can we do that without the help of God?
We can't do that without the help of God, and we can't do that without the help of other people as well.
Okay.
So
this isn't something that you're on your own, pull up your bootstraps. You're in a context.
I don't see how this is it's possible. And plus, we understand that human beings are social animals.
Yes.
And we need to be corrected by other people. And then we also follow the example of other people. So we see a virtuous person, we say, wow, that person did something great. I want to follow that.
And not only are we social animals, which goes against basically the libertarian philosophy, but we're religious animals, which basically goes against all of secular humanist philosophy.
Right.
And so that we need the help from both, from each other, but particularly from the grace of God. And Alcoholics Anonymous and all of these 12-step programs recognize that point.
And there's even something even more to this. There's more to this is in that it's directed towards something. We have
importance.
These virtues don't exist in a vacuum, but they are actually directed toward an end of either justice or temperance, and eventually an ultimate end of loving God as your ultimate virtue.
And that's what we're made for.
That is what we're made for.
You say, why don't we find ultimate happiness in this life? Because we weren't made solely for this life.
Right. We were meant for God.
And that is an important point, because he is the ultimate lawgiver that designs human nature, and hence we have natural law, and leads people to create civil laws as long as they don't contradict natural law.
We were made in the image of God, and we are. It is desired that we will become more like God, who is love.
And hence, ultimately, the law is love.
Right. Absolutely.